Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. Well, when I was young, was so much younger.
Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. We're awfully glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and just across the way, a man whose favorite dipping sauce is ketchup, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
That is partially true. I cut back on it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Inflation, so, you know?
Yeah. It's starting to even affect the Fraser household, huh?
It is.
Yeah. So, George, you've been telling me for years you're thinking about joining the internet. You finally did. You finally got
Well, I wanted
high
to see if
internet.
It was going to, you know, hang around, and it did. The problem is now I'm streaming these shows. It's like giving donuts to the addict, you know? We're shoveling it in, and I can see where this progresses, where I won't leave the house in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey, you know, Blacklist, beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it's good. And we want to say, again, a special thanks to all the support we got last week during our fall fundraiser. It was spectacular. And a special thank you to some very devoted fans of Real Recovery that said, we want to put up a matching gift. And you did. And we did more than match it. We exceeded it by a large amount. So thank you for that. It was highly motivating for a lot of people. And it was a spectacular week. So thank you for doing that.
You know, that is great. And we don't have fans for Real Recovery. We have fans of God. And
exactly.
And I know you meant that. But we're fans of that, too, although we do like ourselves a little bit, actually. But I never get tired of hearing God's story in people. And tonight, time permitting, Bill,
if we
can get Glenn on, it should be fantastic. And I worked with Glenn. You've worked with Glenn. We've known him forever. It'll be a great show. God has done tremendous things in his life. And as we always say on Real Recovery, the big thing is God picks us up, saves us, cleans us, dusts us off. He says, I got a job for you to do. And I can't think of anybody, Bill, that I've met that's worked with more people than Glenn. Mm-hmm.
George, I would suggest not oversell the idea that we're going to have Glenn on the show, even though he's in studio.
It's a tease.
No, but I'm just saying, I know he's in studio, but let's say you and I get on some roll. And we simply don't have time to bring him on.
You know what Glenn has that I don't?
a sport coat.
Yeah.
I saw that one coming.
I got to go to a dinner fundraiser. Somebody's comping me, obviously, because I don't believe in those things, but they cost me money. Anyway, apparently you can't wear a golf shirt.
You can't wear that sweatshirt you have on right now?
The Wild?
Yeah.
I could do that.
You probably could. Just have to wash it. Between now and then.
People would think I'm still in the program they're raising money for.
Yeah.
And maybe I could hit them up for a donation myself.
That would help. On Real Recovery, we always like to talk about one of the 12 steps, which we understand them to be biblically based. And we've got a 12-step expert in the room with us tonight. Not only George Fraser, but our guest, Glenn Rank. No, I know. I'm just trying to, you know, set the stage for what we're going to talk about tonight. But we're also going to hear Glenn's story, but we thought we would be foolish not to include Glenn in our 12-step portion of the show because nobody knows these steps quite like you and Glenn.
And hopefully you'll be able to speak better than we are.
It is. Sometimes it's hard to get the mouth going,
no,
right?
No, it is. When I think of Glenn, and I was thinking about this driving over to the studio tonight, Bill.
Or today.
Tomorrow.
Yesterday.
And I thought, Glenn's life exemplifies step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we carried this message to alcoholics, and we practiced these principles in all our affairs. And what we talk about always is he doesn't help us in our recovery without having a job for us to do. And if you're wondering what your purpose is in life and you have an alcohol and drug problem, we can answer that for you. God has a purpose for you to share the victory he's going to give you with other people. And it's the best part of my recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking we bring Glenn on right now with that because
it's... Not yet. I want to talk about a verse...
We're not going to Ryan.
No.
So
I want to talk about a verse that I can tie into step 12, which was having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps, we try to carry the message to others and practice these principles in all our affairs. And I jotted down Galatians 6:1 that says, brothers, if someone is caught in a sin, you who are spiritual should restore them gently, but watch yourself, or you also may be tempted. I don't know if you like that verse or not. For step 12.
There was one word that was different.
That's the New International Version. What word is different?
No, not in the scripture, but in the step.
Oh, maybe I didn't read
awakening.
It correctly.
Ah, yeah, spiritual experience, was that it? Instead of awakening?
It did say experience. Yeah. So that was on a Celebrate Recovery 12 step. So they might have tweaked it a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I won't say that I don't agree with the tweaking, but I just did, and I'm going to go with that. I like the awakening, and experience isn't bad, but I think it minimizes what happened. And what that is, I got to go back to step two on this, Glenn, where I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. That's when the Spirit of God convicts us, but at the same time offers us hope. And that's why I like awakening.
Mm, I like that, too. Remember, we haven't brought Glenn on yet.
No. Am I seeing things? He looks like Glenn.
No, he's here. No, okay. We're going to bring him on. Okay. I think we should do it now. And, all right?
Just in that awakening, I believe, I've come to believe through time, recovery at its core is about becoming somebody I'm not willing to give up. Becoming someone I'm not willing to give up. Because I gave up that other guy so many times.
Okay.
And the 12-step process is about coming to God, walking a path, one foot in front of the other. What I see so many men get to through this process, and ones that make it to the 12th step, is they turn around and they look back, and how do they get here? And that's the process, is by doing simple things, one after another, I change. And if I don't become somebody different, I got no chance. I have no chance. I will fail.
Okay.
So this is about becoming someone I'm not willing to give up, and allowing God to work in my life to that point where that can happen.
I love that. And I think of a couple of scripture verses, Bill, on that. If any man be in Christ, he's a new creation. And we put off the old, but we have to put on the new. And I think I hadn't thought about it, and I know you very well, about looking back. Well, that's so good, because what we do is we might not turn around and look back, but we think about what we used to do. And I believe relapse is a process by which I return to chemical use so I can identify it and change it. But the longer I fantasize about anything, Bill, I'm sinning.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a point of no return where you get where you're fantasizing, where if you get the chance to do it, you're going to. And I don't know where that point of no return is, but I know I'm not going to call one of you guys to talk me out of it. And I think any time that I fantasize, I'm saying that God's reality isn't good enough for me at this moment, and I'm sinning.
But once the switch gets flipped, there's probably no stopping you, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the internet and binging TV. I think we're in trouble.
And Pringles.
What?
And Pringles.
I don't eat Pringles. More of a Doritos guy.
I can't do anything about that.
Okay.
But Pringles? That's what you like, Pringles?
Pringles? They still make those?
Once you pop, you can't stop.
Oh, okay.
Why is it that?
I got the bubble up going over there, too, you know?
But, Fresca, yes.
But we do the same thing with lesser evil consequences, right? We're all in guys. And the only time we show any moderation at all is in our walk with the Lord and our recovery. And what we need to do is change that. And you have to become aware that you are. And I like the awakened that we were asleep. We had the Rip Van Winkle deal going where you go, oh, my gosh, there's a clock. There's a clock on the mantle, Bill. How long's that been there? 10 years? Didn't see it because I was loaded.
Mm.
Wasn't a good analogy. But,
you
know,
you lost me.
Killed some airtime.
Yeah, you lost me on the Rip Van Winkle thing, just
remember,
so you
Rip
know.
Van Winkle, oh,
I remember
it, asleep,
yeah,
and then he
I
wakes up.
It. Yeah,
Glenn always talks about the movie The Wizard of Oz. It's in black and white, and then the color comes on. That's your first year of recovery.
Yeah, it, and that doesn't mean it can't be fulfilling and joyful, but it's not Technicolor. It's pretty black and white. It can be a slog, and it can be putting one foot in front of the other. I have to work hard in my first year of recovery to make it fulfilling and joyful. Whereas all of a sudden you get to Oz and the Technicolor hits, and recovery can be a great journey, an amazing journey.
What about those little monkey guys? Yeah, that still freak you out?
It's the flying that gets me every time.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're right, and if you're listening tonight and you're struggling in your first year of recovery or first couple of years, don't feel alone. My first year of recovery was horrible at times, but God gave me the strength to get through it. And you talked about turning back. When we get to your story, my guess is you did have some sobriety and went back out. Is that fair?
A few times, yes.
You have to tell the Zima story. You have to. So are we setting this up for step 12, Bill? Do you like that?
We've done a nice job. You've done a nice job. Both you and Glenn have done a nice job. I read, having had a spiritual experience, and you corrected me, to spiritual awakening, and I like that better, too. I like awakening more than experience.
As much as I like correcting you, but I never do, I didn't mean to correct you. I've got these so ingrained. Yeah. It's like I'm drinking the Kool-Aid.
Oh,
you know?
No. I like it. I think a spiritual awakening is better.
And to be honest with you, within the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous book, it will use those interchangeably. Spiritual experience, psychic change.
Okay.
Spiritual awakening and personality change.
Yeah. Does the big book use the name Rip Van Winkle?
Several times, but okay. They edited it out.
All right.
Thank you. Good cover.
You're listening to Real Recovery, and I hope you stay with us. We've got a fantastic story coming up from our guest, Glenn, who is in studio with George and I. Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery, Bill and George, and we've got our special guest, Mr. Glenn Rank, in studio with us. George, I've heard Glenn's story before. It is a powerful story.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And true.
Yeah.
That's what we always say when we have a good start. Parts of it are true, but it's good. No, and it's painful, but at the end, it's very victorious.
Yeah, and Glenn, I don't think you need us asking you leading questions to get into your story. I think you've told it enough times. Maybe you could just unfold it for our audience.
I'd be happy to. I grew up not fitting in, and it's the same story I've heard from in probably every speaker meeting I've ever been to, and probably I think it is part of this affliction is I don't feel like I'm comfortable in my own skin. And I grew up not fitting up in anywhere, not. And then I found drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And I went from a place where I didn't feel like I was really fit into this world and really comfortable in this world to a place where I could be comfortable and casual and
cool,
popular and all these things and it was a solution to what I saw as my affliction in life, which is I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
I was uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I often talk to people about that because it's I found a solution to the biggest problem, and then the solution started trying to kill me and everyone around me.
Mm. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
And because I love that you said something that's been said many times before. I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. What did you say? I didn't feel like I fit in, right?
Correct.
So if we break that down, because I know there's parents and grandparents listening, and they've got kids and grandkids that might feel a little disenfranchised. Was it your, were you shy? Were other guys in your class not making friends with you? Was it... where there's no connection in sports? Was there, what was causing you to feel disconnected?
I don't think I was shy. I've heard it put so many different ways. I just didn't know how to comfortably talk to you.
Okay.
I didn't know how to, I kept trying and trying. I wasn't shy at all. I just irritated a lot of people.
Okay.
But I think I heard it said Hazleton had a 50th anniversary thing early when I was early in recovery. And the speaker was the lead singer from a really popular band back in the 70s and 80s. And the way he put it was, I felt like I got the same book everybody else did, but the first chapter was missing from mine. And I've heard it versed and told in so many ways, but that was the problem. I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere.
So there's a lack of connection.
And then all of a sudden I did.
Okay.
And to ask me, I would say to ask somebody to give that up after. But to ask me to give that up after, that wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
What did you like about it?
I could be comfortable around people. I could get along with people. I could be popular. It just in the moment, life was easier.
So it worked for a while.
Worked very well for a while.
How long did you do that?
Well, I started at an early age. So probably from summer after fifth grade until I was 40 years old. So it was quite a long time.
Well, if you didn't repeat any grades, I'm going to guess you were about 11, right?
that would be pretty close there. Mm.
It's an early start.
I didn't start smoking.
It is for guys our age. It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you didn't start smoking.
Didn't start smoking until I was 12.
Okay, good. Some restraint there.
Exactly. You were saying something earlier about not having discipline and moderation in your life. I don't have a governor either. And so it's you know, if something's good, more of it's going to be better.
Yeah, you talked about the first chapter missing in the Rockstars book. My off button didn't get assembled. And I think most of the guys are like that. We're all the way in. So did you get through high school okay? And were you working while you were going to high school? What was going on in your life that you were partying and was it working?
I got through high school sometime later. It didn't seem important at the time.
Okay.
I had the same with college. I did that sometime later too. It didn't seem important at the time, but yes, I was working at an early age. I moved out of my parents' house at an early age as soon as I could get a job and got an apartment with a good friend. And it was pretty much party central from day. That place was always.
Okay.
Matter of fact, my first geographic was I moved out of Dinkytown because I thought that I quit doing any kind of hard drugs and moved out of Dinkytown thinking that would solve my problem. And because I moved to Northeast Minneapolis because we all know there are no bars in Northeast Minneapolis.
That was a good move. How long did that last for you? Do you realize no difference here?
I was 17 or 18 when I moved out of Dinkytown, and by that time I was already having problems with daily usage and.
So do you think you were an addict then?
No question.
Okay.
And just for listeners who don't know what Dinkytown is, it's the University of Minnesota the campus, and it's got a little area which there's lots of bars and restaurants and stores and shops, and it's kind of the Grand Central Station for the University of Minnesota, and it's called Dinkytown. Not to confuse listeners, but it is a interesting place to live, and if you were living there, you were at the center of activity.
Yes, it was a very interesting place to live back. And I'm old, so it was a long time ago. I kept thinking there had to be something else, so I kept trying different careers, different things, and I decided to try business. Got a job. Actually, took a huge cut in pay to take this job, but turns out I was pretty good at it, and ended up with my career taken off a little bit. But I kept getting more and more consequences from usage.
What kind of consequences were you getting? Were they emotional? Were they legal?
Most of them were legal.
Okay.
Most of them were legal.
Oh, we can deal with that, right?
Yes. And
DWIs.
Yes.
Minor possession.
My problem wasn't using or drinking. It was getting caught.
Correct.
And So I got a few DUIs or DWIs and some other things happening, and I remember I got, first time I was introduced to 12-step recovery. There's a house in South Minneapolis that's got a lot of history in it at 2218 First Street. And a guy in a black robe sent me there on my third DWI, I think. And
judge or priest?
Yes, it was a judge.
Now, you were raised Catholic, weren't you? So you have
I am raised Catholic, yes.
You have a sense of God.
Yeah, and I have come to him a lot closer through a lot of the work I've done, but I always believed in God. I just, back then, I just never believed in a power greater than myself. And what I mean by that is I got me.
Okay.
And I left the weather to him and the waves and the, you know, the moon and all that stuff, but I got me.
So you got the rest of it. You're going to let him have the big stuff.
Well, it's...
I just wondered, the reason I asked, did you ever have any pangs of guilt that I'm doing stuff I shouldn't be?
All the time.
Okay.
But I sold my character for nothing.
Okay.
For decades.
And that gets easier after time, doesn't it?
It does.
It's your new normal. And but the career's going well.
It was getting better. The reason I brought up the 2218 thing is I went there twice. I showed up. It was a fall. I remember it looking warm and inviting and all these things. And there was something attractive about it. I had to go one Thursday and get a red slip, and then two Thursdays later and get a green slip going through an orientation program. And then you take it to to your PO and you get some time knocked off. And it's just, but there was something about it I liked. And I bring that up and do it because my next, and I'm losing words. I apologize. No. My next consequence was pretty horrific. I saw this. I saw people were living differently, but I was pretty sure I was too complex for it. I was pretty, you know, there was part of me that was kind of sad that I couldn't do it. But I saw something that looked good. And I think it was 18 months later, I had been relocated to Valdosta, Georgia. I went to a happy hour on a Friday evening, and I took the life of an innocent wife and mother with an automobile on my way home. And I don't really wonder what would have happened if I had been able to grasp recovery earlier, because I know I couldn't have. I wasn't ready. There was nothing in it that could have made me ready at the time.
We are going to take a break, but Glenn, thank you for sharing such vulnerability. We'll take a break. When we come back, you listen to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Real Recovery tonight, Bill and George. George, we were having this conversation with Glenn, and right towards the end of the segment, he lets us know that he goes to a happy hour at a bar in Georgia, and then on the way home takes the life of a woman and her daughter.
Yep. Unborn child, wasn't it? No.
Help us, Glenn.
I took the life of an innocent wife and mother.
Oh, got you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't understand that completely.
And I say it that way because I could never say it that way before. And I never got any, I could never have any peace until I could say it that way.
I got.
Because for years, what I said was, I had an accident. For years, what I said was, I was adjudicated to be not guilty of vehicular homicide. For years, I said, and the first one was not the truth. It wasn't an accident. I made decisions that put me in a position to hurt someone else and take someone else's life. And the second one is, although it may be true, I certainly wasn't innocent, even though I was adjudicated to be innocent of vehicular homicide at the time.
And it took you a while to get to that.
Took me a long while.
Okay. I appreciate that honesty and tragedy all the way around for you as well. And, Bill, for a lot of us who drank heavily and used, you were very aware that that could happen, and you did not by any, you know, means hope that it would. But when you're in the power of addiction, you lose the power of choice. And you've got minimizing and denying that it would happen to you. It's like getting hit by lightning, and it happens every day. Tonight, somebody's going to do it. A lot of lives are going to be changed and affected. But I always look to Romans 8:28, that we know that all things work together for good for those who are following God and walking according to his purpose. And we have to look eternally a lot to see that. But I think the rest of this story is going to be great. But what I want to get to is how powerful the addiction is, and not minimize that. So you quit right away after that?
Within decades.
Okay. What was the mind frame going into that?
I could rationalize and justify anything at the time.
Did you quit for
a
while?
It was not my fault.
Okay.
I was in traction for about 120 days. I had a severed aorta and a crushed pelvis and all sorts of other things. So, no, I didn't. I don't think I quit for one day.
Just bad luck?
It was not bad luck. It was
no, but I mean, at the time, how are we thinking?
Oh, at the time, yeah, it's everybody does this stuff, and it's not, you know, I don't know what happened. It's not my fault it happened, and you know, because I had no memory of it, I could insert all sorts of things.
Okay,
and in the back, I think I always carried that. What I did in the back somewhere, but I could never let it come up until I could. And that took a lot of recovery and a lot of time. You said something interesting, and that is we lose the choice. We lose the ability to choose whether to pick up or not. And that's the truth. And the hardest part to get people to understand is I still don't have that. I still don't have the ability to choose. I have the ability to do what I need to do to be recovered, which means I won't pick up. But if I don't stop doing those things, there's no question in my mind I'll pick up. I don't have the power of choice over drugs and alcohol. I do have the power of choice over whether I do the things I need to do to be recovered so I don't pick up.
And I've read somewhere in one of your classes that even then the only defense against the first drink comes from God.
No question.
And it's interesting. I want to get back. So your story, you get out of the hospital, get back on your feet literally. Did you keep your job? Were you still working down
there? I did keep my job.
Okay.
And the number of painkillers I was on at the time, I figured out that nobody really knew what I was doing. I put out some really interesting information, and nobody caught it. But all of that said, I went on like that for a long time.
How long is a long time?
Well, that happened in 1984, and I'll get to that date in a few minutes. But February 1st, 1998.
Okay.
Is my recovery date. So I was out there for another 14 years, and it took me a while into recovery before I could actually grasp what I had done.
Did you, in those 14 years, have any attempts at sobriety?
I did.
Okay.
I had, I think, 9 months here and 6 months here.
Was the Zima story in there?
Yes, that would have been.
Could you share that with us?
1994.
Our okay.
So Bill talks about white lightning is where this comes from, and he tells a story. He doesn't tell us it's white lightning, but There's something called Jersey Lightning back in the day. And Bill had to try it. He couldn't not try it. And I remember
you're not
sitting
talking
at
about
a bar.
Me right now. Just
yeah, I'm talking about you, Bill.
Okay,
no,
well, no,
Bill
just
W.
So,
I'm sorry.
Just so you need to make it clear to the listeners.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill Wilson.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, Bill W. Can I say Bill Wilson?
There you go.
Did I? Yeah.
But he talks about that, and I always think of the time I had tried to quit, but I was doing everything I'd always done. I'm up on a snowmobile trip, going out with a bunch of guys. Snowmobiles, I believe, were probably invented to go from bar to bar, and that's what we were doing. And I was sitting there having, you know, NA beer or Diet Coke or whatever when we got to the places. And I'm sitting there, and I see this. This is back when Zima first came out. And there's this big marketing.
Do you remember Zima, Bill?
I do. I remember
Clear
that.
Liquid, I believe, and
Zima.
Zima. Life-changing Zima.
Exactly. And I'm sitting at this bar going, I'm never going to be able to try that. Never going to be able to try that. And for the, you know, it was driving me nuts for some reason. And I didn't pick up that day, but not too long after that, I went into my last relapse, which lasted almost 4 years. And I was out there, and I believe that I knew how screwed I was, pardon my language. At the moment, about half of a caterpillar line got up my nose of cocaine, and I'm sitting there knowing I'm in real trouble because I'm you know, in all these things. But at that point, there's no going back.
Can we back up for a minute?
Yes.
Because I'm interested. You were in a bar thinking about doing Zima, but you didn't drink that time. So you went back out, did your life, and at some point, did you have to have
the Zima?
Ask the
question. Ask the question.
Did you have the Zima?
I would never drink Zima. Are you nuts?
Did you go in to get a Zima?
No, I had that's the last thing in the world I wanted. Once I picked up, I wanted back. I'm going to drink straight liquor again and do the things I've always done. And so it was just this thing in my head
that triggered it.
Yeah.
And you didn't deal with it right away. It stayed there. You know, you're thinking about it and you don't do it. And Bill, that's what we do. We've got to, when we have a problem, we have to call somebody, pray about it, scripture verses, because it's going to build up.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees a commercial and the relapse process starts. And I got to tell you, when I see some of these beer commercials where they're on the beach and it's young, good-looking people having fun, and I'm sitting at home with my dog, I got to go, God, keep me sober on this, because it plays on your head, doesn't it?
It does.
Very attractive. Yeah, so
it used to. I can tell you that I really don't get that much anymore. But it's been, you know, it's been a long time.
Yeah, Zima never made it, but you did, and that's the end of that story. So what got you back this time?
So, and I'll tell you, it was I can't answer that question, but I will tell you the circumstances. So I got another DUI, and it was January 31st of 1998. And I'm being processed in the Hennepin County lockup in the quad. And I remember somebody kicking my bunk. He thought I snored. I've never heard it. And trying to wake me up in the morning. And for the first time in my life, I woke up. And I couldn't rationalize and justify my life anymore. For the first time in my life, I was not able to unsee who I was, and I was repulsed. I mean, just every other time I would have been making plans and trying to figure out how I was going to get around this and what I was going to do here, which female I was going to talk into buying me a car, and how I was going to, all these things, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't not see who I was, and I was lowest point I've ever, you know, I can reach back and grasp that now, that hopelessness, that despair now. And it's the best gift I've ever gotten. And it felt like it did not feel like a gift. But for the first time in my life, I actually said out loud while I was in that lockup, I'm just going to shut up and do whatever they tell me. I am just going to shut up and do whatever they tell me. And that's not in me. That was not the ability to see who I really was and not be able to not see it didn't come from me. The shut up and do what they tell me certainly didn't come from me.
Bill, the scales fell from the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
We read that in the Bible, and it happens. And it's interesting to me when we hear people's story. They know when it happens, just like they knew when they had that first drink and got drunk. This is the solution. It's very interesting to me. There's a counterfeit solution and then the real one.
Yeah, but when self empties out, God can come in.
Amen.
Yeah, but I think he empties you out.
I know, he does.
I don't think we do that. And it's very powerful. Having been to jail a few times myself, I'm sitting there going, I'm glad I get to leave after the show. So what happened when you got out?
I got out and I actually still didn't think that a 12-step way was the way to go. So I went through a bio-based program.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And
you
liked
that.
It was a good
place.
No, yeah. No. They cleared me up, got me physically healthy to the point where maybe I could see a few things differently. But I was feeling lost still. And on a Saturday morning, I walked into Pepito's, which had some 12-step meetings at the time. And
Mexican restaurant in Minneapolis.
Correct.
48th in Chicago, if I recall.
You are correct. And I walked in there on a Saturday morning, and a man that I had chosen as my sponsor years before, because I knew he'd never asked me to do anything, and he had relapsed, and I had relapsed since then, and everything. But he came in, and he talked about this study in action thing. And he said, there's a study in action, the big book going on at St. Ben's in Brooklyn Center, and I heard it was really good and all these things. And so I raised my hand, which I have no idea where that comes from either, and said, I don't have a way to get there. Can somebody drive me? Because for the first time in my life also, I said, I'm taking whatever consequence they give me. And one of the consequences was I couldn't drive for 3 years. And every other time I would have been driving. Every other time I would have been finding a way out of whatever. And so a man who I still sponsor today, David S., raised his hand and said, I'd be happy to take you. And we we've started every Sunday going out there, and it changed my life. See, I had been in the rooms of those places for so many years, but I never understood what it was. I always thought that 12-step recovery was going to a place once a week, smoking a lot of cigarettes, drinking a lot of coffee, and complaining about my life. And I did. That's what I had seen, and that's what I believed. And it turns out there's a different side to the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing.
I think we should hear about that side when we come back. You're listening to Real Recovery. Our guest is Glenn Rank, and we'll take a short break and be right back. There's that music that says, George, we're down to our last segment of tonight's episode, award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Glenn Rank is our guest in studio. Amazing story. And I just learned during the break that you two have the same experience at this recovery meeting.
It was a study.
Study, yeah.
And it's 13, 14 weeks. And I did it 13 times. And it was a lot of work, And half the people who would start wouldn't finish, at least. But that's where I met Glenn. He was a panelist. But it, if you're going to do it and you got through it, you're pretty serious about it. But if you do the work, what's that old saying? I took steps that I didn't think would work and I got results that I can't deny.
Correct.
Is that what happened to you?
No question.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about the Salvation Army in a couple of minutes too.
Okay.
But it's the reason my desperation made me be able to open my eyes and hear. So I was able to listen to people who had built real lives and done great things through using a 12-step process and showing other people how to do it. And I was able to hear them for the first time and actually go along that process. And my life changed. My life got good. And I had a different solution to those problems I always had.
And you developed a relationship with God.
No question. It became the largest thing in my life. Became and still is the largest thing in my life.
So one of the things, Bill, is a lot of people will hear our show tonight and go, okay, really good, but when are you going to talk about Jesus? And here's what I want to say to that. Jesus is all over this story. Forgiveness, redemption. And a lot of us walk our faith out with a method called working the 12 steps for eating, drinking, gambling. And the reason we do that, if you're listening, and maybe you're a Christian who's in recovery and in and out, wouldn't be the first in our studio.
No.
It's because you hear the sermon and you don't know how to do it. And one of my big gripes, there's many of them, is when I hear a good sermon and you don't tell me how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's in my head, it's trying to get to my heart, but it ain't getting to my feet. And I think it's a sin whenever we do that, when we work with guys. This is a simple way to walk out your faith. We work out our salvation with fear and trembling. Faith without works is dead. We're not saved by our works. We're saved by faith, therefore no one can boast. But how do you keep it going? And if you go, I can't do it, he can do it, I'm going to let God do it, steps 1, 2, and 3, you're well on your way. And, of course, when we do step 5, we ask God for forgiveness of our sins because we got that going for us too. And that's how we walk out our faith. And there's nothing magical. We don't worship at the altar of AA, but it helps us walk out our faith.
No question. It gives me discipline that I don't have to stay in my faith.
I couldn't have said that better myself. It gives me a daily way to walk out my faith.
Amen.
And so this happened, and you got serious, and you got sober. I have a really good friend who looks like you, who always tells people when they go back to using, I got a question for you. How many people were you working with when you went back out?
Now you're stealing my thunder.
I am stealing. Zero. So where I'm going with this, how long did it take you before you started working with other people?
It was actually prescribed during the study in action. And I initially started working with the man that drove me. And I've worked with a lot of other men since then.
So what transpired in the years since regarding the what they would call service work?
In our textbook, it tells me that the people that did this and developed the program, the book, and everything else, they say they all of us spent much of our free time in this endeavor. They also say that strenuous work one-on-one, one alcoholic with another, one addict with another, is vital to long-term recovery. So I know I have to keep doing that, and it's everyone I have seen that has relapsed over a period of time, I have asked that exact question too. Whether it be at HRC, I worked there, I actually brought 12-step recovery into the bio-based treatment center and manage their outpatient program or their aftercare program for a period of time, wherever it is, wherever I've had the opportunity to work with guys, I've asked the same question. And over the past 14 years now at the Salvation Army, I've been able to ask everyone that comes in there, which has been thousands of men, the same question. How many men were you working with? How many men were you sponsoring when you relapsed? And I've never gotten a truthful answer greater than zero.
You know, I read somewhere that experience tells us that nothing insures against taking that first drink, like working with another alcoholic. And I remember when I first heard that, I thought, well, of course, you see how bad it is. And what I missed, Bill, was the great experience of my recovery is seeing a person who's dying in their sins get saved by a God that I can't see. And I never get tired of seeing it. Mm. And that's why we do this show. Mm-hmm. And if you're listening tonight and you're struggling, maybe you're trying to work your recovery instead of sharing your recovery with other people, because that's the good part. And Glenn, I met you at the Salvation Army. You were the program director for a while after I was. But you walk the walk, and you have a full-time day job. Back in that part of Minneapolis where a lot of stuff's going on, he's in the real estate business. And yet you started a halfway house for guys.
Actually, I need to, we were able to start Replication House, trying to replicate exactly what the first 100 did in 12-step recovery. I've been aided a ton by, two people that I'll call out, which is Tim and Karen Harmson, which are the owner of the company I work for and good friends. And they've helped me in that and supported me in the sober house. I think I've seen a lot of men that have come through there and done very well. I've seen a lot of men come through the Salvation Army. I'm going to tell you the brightest spot in my life, bar none, the reason I know I have to spend my time working with others and I have to spend my time in service work in order to get this gift. It's the best part of my life is watching men build real lives, watching men that didn't believe they could build real lives. And I see that down at the Salvation Army Adult Rehabilitation Center day in and day out. And that's the beauty of, you know, you start because you have to. It is hands down the biggest gift in my life is watching that happen.
Mm. Glenn, we just have a minute left, and right before the show, you had said something to me. I said, oh, you got to repeat that on the show. And you were talking about the repetition of the 12 steps, but you do it because it's important for them to hear it over and over. Then you said something very wise, and I'd like to close the show with that.
Well, I don't know anyone too stupid to do this. It's not complicated.
Why are you looking at me?
I know, and I've been to the funerals of, and I've been to the, I know a lot of people that have been too smart to do this. I don't know anybody that hasn't been able to do this because they don't get it.
It's simple.
And I get back all the time from the classes I teach and everything else. You keep saying the same thing over and over again. Of course I do. It's not complicated.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Glenn, thank you so much for being on the show. Georgie, that wraps up another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. That's all
thanks,
the time
Bill.
We have for today, this afternoon, tonight.
Tomorrow.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for listening and supporting not only Faith Radio, but Real Recovery. That means a lot to us. Have a great night, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.